Time for Politics Wednesday. It is Mark Mitchell and Jenny Anderson. Good morning to you both.
Good morning, Mark.
Now, you're in Sydney, Mark, because you made the news the other day because you laid a reef after the dreadful business at Bondi. It's hard to ask because it's a big city, but what's the vibe post what happened there?
Yeah, although obviously by our standards, Sydney is a very big city, but it's still only 1 degree of separation. We went up to Bondi Junction, Sarah and I, to lay flowers, and we ended up spending sort of half a day up there with the community who had all turned out. We're obviously seeking comfort and support from one another, and you could see that, you know, just deeply, deeply, a complete tragedy, which had deeply impacted not just the community, but Sydney and Australians, you know, and of course a lot of Kiwis who live over here.
Yeah, exactly. What's the debate? Because, of course, it was random, and then you had the church one the day after, and then last night you had one in Melbourne as well, so it's got that whole copycat thing going on. Are people angsty?
Yeah, so, of course, it has an impact on people because these are places that they should feel safe in. And I guess probably the real debate that arose was what more can be done around security. Whether security guards should be armed. But look, I think that the messaging that came out from the leaders was very clear: de-escalate. And everyone was on exactly the same message in terms of we need calm now, we need to de-escalate. They're very worried and concerned, obviously, about, especially in relation to the attack on the bishop, that there was some sort of retribution that was sought. Yeah. But everything feels calm, and I think that people have responded.
Couple of things for you, Jenny. Just try and make this apolitical, but the tunnel in Wellington, so I want to get a vibe on this, given you're a Wellington MP. The tunnel under the ground, billions of dollars versus what they're proposing. I mean, is that a goer? Is that realistic in your view?
Well, people are still pretty grumpy about the ferries getting cancelled. There was a contract in place there, and the main reason that contract was ripped up was it was too expensive. So to now be told there's going to be this multi-billion, potentially, tunnel that are being looked into when there's no reliable ferry service for freighting passengers seems just crazy, to be honest.
All right. If they hadn't cancelled the ferries, is the tunnel a good idea?
It depends who you talk to. So there's a number of roads that have been promised that all seem very far in the distance. There's Batoni to Granada, that's costed it well over $1 billion. So the fact that it's been put forward, there will be people who like that because the fact that it reduces time and traffic, that's great. But who's going to pay for it and how is it actually going to happen when Wellington still is on a fault line?
Yeah, fair enough. A couple of things. Mark.
No, I was just going to say, I think that I think Jenny's right, is that under a Labor government, the delivery of infrastructure, number one, basically didn't happen, and when it did, it was very expensive. But I think we had a very clear example up on the Coromandel with the rebuilding of the bridge that you can deliver infrastructure on time and on budget. I think the lesson that came out of that was that you had a very, very good effective team that took decisions early and got things going. And I think that if we take that approach...
It was all being done in the past, and it got finished and cut the ribbon. Come on.
Be that as it may, what worried me, both of you, is that the bloke who built it, the first thing he said, we could never do that again. This was a one-off. And I thought, oh, well, never mind.
And that's the whole point, is that we've got to get better at delivering infrastructure on time in our country. At the end of the day, they're looking at they're going to look at the tunnel and they're going to do exactly that, is go through a business case and analysis. Yeah.
All right. Jenny,
I would say people who are going through a cost of living crisis are going to have their free kids bus fares cut at the end of the month, and you've got those who are under 25, half the price cut. They were two things that really helped people on limited budgets, being able to have a bit of extra money in their pocket, and these people are cutting that, but then promising big multi-billion dollar tunnels that go...
Well, of course... Of course, Mike, the problem that we had as an incoming government, we were talking about the lunches last week.
No, not that, lunches.
The point that I'm making is this, Jenny. You guys didn't fund it. There were fiscal cliffs everywhere as we came into government. Yet there was no funding for the school lunches, Jenny.
A budget, Mark, and you get some more money, and then you pay for things. That's what a budget is. And you've got one at the end of May. That's what you do.
Yeah, what you guys tend to do, like Jan Tanetti was a classic example, is you just say, oh, we'll do an appropriation, we'll get more money. You didn't fund it. There was no out years for it. There's no planning. There was no fiscal responsibility in terms of anything that you were doing. And unfortunately now, as the incoming government, we found out the books were much worse than they were, and we're having to fix that, and we are going to fix it.
Ginny, in theory, this Karen Chaw case with the Waitangi Tribunal and 7AA of the Ōranga Tamariki Act, should the Waitangi Tribunal have the power to summons a cabinet minister?
Well, they've asked her for an affidavit, so a written statement or an appearance, and she's refused to give a written statement. So it would have been easy for everyone if she just had of responded to the removal of 7AA, that section, and given a written statement. It would have been easier for everybody.
But she didn't.
And they are a tribunal. They are a court. They have inquiry powers. They have the ability to issue her notice. Whether she comes or not is another question. Yeah. And if she doesn't come, I don't know what happens then. Do they call 111? I mean, what do you do?
That's my next question. Have we got massive overreach here?
Well, that's a legitimate question, though, because that's in the coalition agreement to take a look at the tribunal, but also the removal of 7AA. And for people listening, that's that when you're uplifting children who are Māori, there's a responsibility on the chief executive to have a think about where they're going back into. So not just uplifting children from Māori households and planting them into another household where they don't have a cultural connection, because that's proved to be didn't work in the past.
Correct.
So all they're wanting is for her to front up and talk to that point of why she's removing it. I think she's got a responsibility to New Zealanders to answer that question if she's taking action in that space, and it would be easier for everyone if she just provided a written statement.
What do you reckon, Mark? Is there overreach here or not? Specifically and generally of the tribunal.
Yeah, I'm not sure if tribunals can require ministers. There's obviously a separation in the way the government's set up. They're part of the executive, I'm sure. I don't know what the legal position is.
They have the power. I looked it up.
Will Crown Law say they'd take it to court?
Yeah, I just don't. I'd have to go back and have a look at that. It seems very unusual that a tribunal can demand that a minister and a member of the executive.
Who's running the country? Is it the tribunal or the government?
Well, that's the whole point. There is a separation for a reason in terms of governance. But look, I just want to say this about Karen Chaw, Mike. She has lived experience. I think if you speak to anyone, you will not find a minister more passionate about the work that she's doing for our young people. And the decisions that she has made, I can tell you, are completely, totally focused on what is best for them. Not the adults, what's best for the children. And she is doing an outstanding job.
Now,
just because you have lived experience, though, doesn't mean you should be above the law. And if there's a tribunal that wants her views, you would think that if she has lived experience, she would want to offer that up. That seems very unusual.
I get that. But what I'm trying to do, Ginny, is work out, I mean, we're paying for all of this. And at the end of the day, they produce a report. No matter what that report says, the government of the day can either listen to it or not listen to it. In other words, they've got no real power. And there just seems to be a lot of wah, wah, wah going on, another one of their urgent reviews, and it's just how much money do you want to spend on this stuff?
Well, it's how much you want to hold the government to account. And this government particularly has done a lot of detrimental things in that space around the treaty relationship. And if we're wanting to have democracy and we're wanting to examine these issues, then they have a legitimate purpose. The other underlying issue is that they want to review the entire tribunal and potentially scrap it.
I would.
Well, the test is...
Tomorrow.
The test is really simple, and actually in the National Party we actually highly value personal experience and lived experience. We think it's actually really important when you're in a very powerful position and making decisions in people's lives that you actually had some life experience yourself. But I think that with Karen it's as simple as this. She is putting the children's best interests at heart, and that hasn't happened.
How can you say that?
In Ōranga
Tamariki.
Because I work with her and I see her at work, and she's an inspiring minister. Is deeply passionate about what she's doing.
Yeah, I don't think you doubt, Ginny, you can't doubt that she's got the best interests of kids at heart, can you?
Well, when she's making changes, like taking away funding to important funding for kids that access it and introducing boot camps, when there's actual evidence, research that shows it does nothing to reduce reoffending. It makes them reoffend more.
All the lived experience in the world is wonderful,
but what it doesn't do is deliver better outcomes for our children. And it's your Prime Minister, Christopher Luxon, who goes on about outcomes all the time. And if you're that interested in outcomes, you would value that more than just having someone who takes a box of lived experience.
Let me talk to you about the military youth academies. We've got enormous amount of people that are working in the social sector that are coming to us now and say, we want to be a part of this. We think this could be a game changer for these young people. We put them in a very positive environment with the best role models and mentors that we can offer up as a country. We've got David and Billy Graham, for example, who are hugely respected, that want to be part of the program. I had Sean Fitzpatrick, that runs a similar program around the world, approach me, and we went and met with him the other day. He wants to be a part of it. We've got lots of people, Ginny, that are stepping up and saying, this could be a real game changer for those young children that are in awful home situations often. The gangs have got their hooks into them, and we're going to take them and we're going to put them in a very positive environment with our best role models and mentors. We're going to invest in their numeracy and literacy in their future, and we're going to keep them coming. We're going to stop them and get them off that fast track into the adult criminal justice system. And I think that is a very good thing to do.
Nice debate, guys. Well done, Mark Mitchell, Ginny Anderson, for another Wednesday.
For more from the Mike Hosking Breakfast, listen live to News Talk ZB from 6 a.m. weekdays, or follow the podcast on iHeartRadio.